very good morning to you. I'm Howard Feldman. This is the Sunday Synthesis Podcast with me, Howard Feldman, and Dr. Anton Marburg. It is the 1st of August, which means it's spring day. Yes, yes, yes. You're going to say it's September. It's a lie. Look outside. The blossoms are there. You've just got to find them. The sun is shining. It is definitely warmer. We have moved past the third wave in Gauteng. Today is spring day. Dr. Anton Marburg, good morning. What are you doing indoors?
So just from a medical point of view, I'd just like to put on record that I think that you have been taking too much of the alcohol on your right-hand side there. And it's actually not spring day on the 1st of August, but it is National Lung Lung Cancer Day today. So it's World Lung Cancer Day.
Sorry, I would rather go with spring day.
And that's the official day of the 1st of August. Official spring day is the 1st of September. I'm just putting it out there.
Only according to the pessimists, the optimists amongst us.
And Dr. Google. Dr. Google definitely says that.
Celebrated every year on this day. Right. How's it looking?
So there are currently 198,597,000 cases worldwide, with 4.2 million deaths and 179 million cases resolved. The United States has 35.7 million cases with 629,000 deaths. India has 31.6 million cases with 424,000 deaths. And South Africa has 2,447,454 cases with 72,013 deaths and 12,528 new cases in the last 24 hours, a 22.3% test positivity rate. The numbers in Gauteng are plummeting downwards, with 6,993 in hospital, 1,272 in ICU, and 742 on ventilators. There's been a big decrease in the numbers in Gauteng. However, places like Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal are rising. KwaZulu-Natal has had their biggest increase since January 2021, with 2,289 new cases yesterday, which is a massive increase from their side.
All right. And of course, the looting didn't help a couple of weeks ago. The timing is exactly right, isn't it?
Right. 100%. Definitely makes sense.
Okay. Tell me about the hospital that you're working at.
So the hospital numbers are down dramatically. As I've said before, at one stage, we're sitting at 158 patients. We're now down to 70 patients in hospital. It's more than a 50% decrease. We've closed 5 wards down. So we're down to 5 actual wards that we're running with COVID patients. So the numbers are down. That being said, those in hospital are still very sick and those in ICU are extremely ill. But there's definitely an element of calmness and tranquility compared to what it was 2 or 3 weeks ago.
A lot of questions around how long we can anticipate before a possible fourth wave. Does a fourth wave have to happen?
Well, I think a fourth wave is on the cards because of the fact of the different variants. So if there's new variants that are going to crop up, or if people aren't vaccinated, or if the numbers aren't high enough, and that being said, our vaccination numbers are going up in a very positive way. People are vaccinating. The actual spread or the course of the vaccination centers is dramatically increasing, and they're doing excellent jobs all over with private companies, public companies, everyone doing their part and pushing the numbers up. So the more people get vaccinated, the lower the chance of a fourth wave. However, if a fourth wave does occur, and it probably will occur, if it does occur, the more people that are vaccinated, the less virulent the wave will be, and the less critical the people will be who get COVID. In other words, that if people do get infections, they will hopefully be covered from a vaccination point of view.
In terms of, it's definitely not called the Lombardy East variant. What's that other one called? This other new one?
There's a Lambda variant.
That's the one. I don't know why I keep thinking of Lombardy East.
We've got to wait and see what the transmissibility of the variant is. We've got to wait and see, you know, how infectious it is and what it does to people. Right now, we're worried about the Delta variant. That's the worst variant we've got and we've seen since the beginning of this pandemic. But our vaccinations and our Johnson & Johnson and our Pfizer vaccinations are definitely playing an integral role in dampening the effect of the Delta variant. And hopefully the Lambda variant will be as susceptible to the vaccinations.
So here's something that I'm a bit confused about and maybe a bit bothered by, is we're seeing a lot of almost panic or very real concern in Israel, in the United States. Israel's demanding people wear masks indoors again. United States are a little bit all over the show. Surely if people have been vaccinated, and the new variants come along, or no matter what it is. In terms of the numbers that we are seeing of people with serious illness and people landing up in hospital, does it differ then in terms of that to people susceptible from a flu? In other words, once we've been vaccinated, shouldn't we then focus on rebuilding and not being neurotic about people getting something which will hardly impact on people because they've been vaccinated?
So I think we can compare it to a game of Monopoly. We can use the get out of jail free card. And if you've been vaccinated, it doesn't mean you can get out of jail free. You still got to be cautious. You still got to go around the jail area and hopefully get to that free parking area where you can collect your reward. But the point of the matter is that we don't know what the new variants are going to hold for us. Are the vaccines going to be susceptible against new variants? And are many people getting infected still despite having had the vaccination? Until we've got the majority of people vaccinated, until we've got that herd type of immunity, we have to keep safe, because we've still got a whole group of people below the age, especially in this country, below the age of 35 that have not been vaccinated. And I'm not talking about overseas, I'm talking about in our country specifically. The majority of people are below the age of 35 have not been vaccinated. In the United States, children over the age of 12 are being vaccinated with the Pfizer. It's not safe for the Moderna as yet, but they're getting the Pfizer vaccine. Here, we've still got a long way to go to vaccinate people against these type of things. We do know that the vaccination is safe. We do know that vaccination does protect you. And I think it's a very important sort of subject to broach with regards to people saying that even people who've been vaccinated get these breakthrough infections. And you've got to look at that as a big number. If you take a group of, let's say, 92% of people are vaccinated in big groups, that's, let's say, 1 million people. 92% means 920,000 of those people have been vaccinated, and 80,000 of them have been either partially or not vaccinated. And if we take the two arms, so it's the 80,000 versus the 920,000. In the 80,000 arm, we see generally that about 2% of people get severe symptomatic COVID disease. And that looks to be about 1,600 people who actually then get COVID disease. Of that, 10% get hospitalized and put into critical units. That's about 160 people. Now look across to the people with the 920,000 who've been fully vaccinated, but both of their jabs with the Pfizer, let's say. If you take 2% of that group, and as well as you use a coefficient that you've got to take that 80% efficacy of the vaccine, you're looking at about 3,680 people that land up getting sick from it, severely sick. And of that, you take the 10% and you add another, let's say 70% variation due to the efficacy of the vaccine, you're looking at about 110 people being admitted to hospital. So if you compare the numbers, you've now got the unvaccinated group, 116 in hospital, and you've got the vaccinated group, 110 in hospital. If you just look at those two numbers, it looks, well, you know, what's the point of the vaccine? Yeah. But you're taking 160 out of 80,000 versus 110 out of 920,000. That proves the vaccine works. There's no doubt about it. If you look in the Western Cape, what's happened in the last three waves? In the first wave, there were 4,525 healthcare workers that got infected. In the second wave, 3,633. And now in the third wave, only 679 healthcare workers have been affected by COVID. So the vaccine works. Why do we then still have to wear masks? Why do we still have to be careful? Because we still don't know if people are susceptible to transferring the virus to other people if they've been vaccinated or if they have had COVID themselves. And we've still got to protect people. That being said, in the coming months, those rules are going to relax. There's no doubt about it. The more people vaccinated, the better. You know, there's a large group of anti-vaxxers all over the world, especially in the United States, of people who aren't getting vaccinated. It's a big problem, that. And we've got to try and protect everybody. So even if you get a small amount of people that get infected, it's still going to cause trouble for other people. But as we go along, and the more vaccinations, and with these maybe these third boosters that are going to be, we talk about later stage, there will be less of a need to be wearing masks outdoors. And maybe people might just start wearing them indoors in shopping centers, that type of thing, but it will filter out and we are going to get into sort of normality, just like we were with the flu and how people got their flu vaccines. So there's definitely a positivity that we're seeing here. There's definitely, we can see the silver lining of the clouds. We've just got to be patient for a bit longer.
And in fact, the announcement last night about the millions upon millions of vaccines that are coming in starting this evening, the Pfizer's, Johnson & Johnson's, it's really, really incredible and very heartwarming. What about the argument that people use that, well, if you vaccinated, you protected, why do I need to bother? You know, don't tell me what to do.
So we just got to look at the event of polio. And look at in the 1950s when we can see the pictures of all those people that were in iron lungs and all the people that weren't vaccinated. And then we can see about the whole population that was vaccinated against polio. We don't have polio anymore. It's not an issue. We've eradicated polio through full vaccination. And that's why we need to eradicate the virus so we don't have to worry about these things down the line. So if half your population is not vaccinated, it's an issue. They will get sick and they can die.
And arguably, polio, the polio drops contains a live serum, doesn't it? It's probably more dangerous 100%. Than any
more dangerous than any of them. And look how well we've done because of it.
Yeah. In terms of the argument that, well, it's so brand new that we don't know what the long-term effects are.
I think the reality of what we're seeing is it's not so brand new anymore. This has now been going on for 8 months. Look at what we're seeing. Look at the improvements. I mean, just look in the Western Cape over the third wave, and we're a country that hasn't gone dramatically overboard with vaccinating just yet. And look at really what we're seeing with the improvement of people that have been vaccinated. So it's not new anymore. It's past that stage. You know, in the first month, it's new. In the second month, it's new. 8 months down the line, we know what we're looking for. We're seeing what we can see, and we're seeing the benefits of vaccination.
Okay, so is there anything else that you want to address in terms of the anti-vaxxers? Because, gosh, when I was looking last night, I mean, people saying on some of these posts, just the most bizarre things about vaccines.
I actually saw a meme, and I think it sort of, it captures the whole heart of the anti-vaxxer movement, but the irony of anti-vaxxers saying that they don't want to be part of an experiment without realizing it, they're now part of the control group. So that says it all.
I love that. Yeah. You are part of the experiment. You can just choose which side you want to be
You've chosen to be part of the experiment.
Right.
Hashtag, just saying.
Absolutely right. You referred earlier to the third shot, a booster shot. Can we just talk about that for a moment?
So there's been a lot of talk about third shots, especially in Israel, but there's been talk of a third dose of an mRNA vaccine, that's mostly the Pfizer or the Moderna, in kidney transplant patients or patients with solid organ transplants, because they've got a minimal serologic response to two doses. In other words, these patients with immune suppression who've been on chemotherapy, who are taking rejection medication to reject sort of an immune response from their new transplant organ, have a lower seroconversion rate, and it's been shown that they do need a third booster. That being said, now in Israel, they've decided that people over the age of 60 and people with comorbidities over the age of 60 need to have the third booster. Remember, Israel started vaccinations early in the year. They've vaccinated a large majority of their population. So after 6 months, 7 months, we're seeing that the antibodies are waning. We still don't know the T cell actual abnormality, like the ratio of that, but the antibodies per se are waning. And there's definitely a wave, or I would say there's definitely a benefit to having a third booster or a third vaccination if you fall far down the line. It's going to be like the flu vaccine. It's going to be a yearly vaccine because if you want to go back to the term used, it's still new. It's still new in the fact that we've still got to decide how many vaccines you are going to require. So from that point of view, that is new.
Right. Can we just talk about long COVID? A lot of questions, I received a lot of questions around this. This is definitely going to become something that people have to manage.
Yeah, look, I think there's a huge lack of understanding of what long COVID is. And I think there's not enough support, especially in this country, to deal with long COVID. We all so busy dealing with acute COVID and the actual critical side of COVID and what's going on in the hospitals that no one's thought down the line to actually developing COVID clinics, which need to be done. These are things, these are reality. You know, in Israel, they've developed COVID clinics. All over the world, they're starting to develop COVID clinics where one day a week, they see post-COVID patients with the long-term sequelae, the long-term consequences of COVID. And there's a niche in the market for that. We need to start developing that. I was going to say,
do I sense a business opportunity, Dr. Anton?
Hashtag GoFundMe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right.
There's a niche in the market to develop something like that. We need that because right now, it's a very similar scenario to what we were seeing with COVID at the beginning. Because of COVID, people were, in essence, ignoring their chronic conditions because they didn't have the ability to treat them because they were scared of going out, the hospitals weren't functioning. Mm-hmm. Now what's happening is because of COVID itself, no one's actually taking cognizance of the long COVID and everyone's trying to get back into normality and they're going to try to get back with their normal chronic conditions. But there needs to be a time set aside to look after patients with long COVID.
What are the common symptoms of long COVID?
So the most common symptom of long COVID is fatigue. It's a very big symptom. Also, you know, you got to understand when does long COVID develop? Is it 1 week, 2 week, 4 weeks? It's more likely after 10 to 12 weeks, if we can call it long COVID. So it's got to be about 3 months down the line. So it's fatigue, it's headaches, it's shortness of breath, it's neurological sort of consequences, it's loss of smell, loss of taste. It's depression and anxiety. All those things need to be addressed as well as the breathing issues that are developed due to the long COVID itself.
A couple of people have mentioned, and I know it was my own experience after my vaccine, is that my brain was a bit mushy for 24 hours or so. Is that a common side effect of the vaccine? And is that common to people who suffer from COVID?
Yeah, so they call it a COVID fog. There's no doubt about it. We've seen it that people who actually have COVID, never mind the vaccine, people who've had COVID and have had moderate to severe COVID suffer far more with this brain fog, where they actually can't concentrate for long periods of time, or they forget things that were acutely happening in their lives and they can't actually remember these things happening, or they can't have a good memory call of the events. So that's very common with COVID. With regards to the first 24 hours after your vaccine, it's not a COVID sort of variation. It's more the fact that you've got this whole immune response going on in your body. And that's why you get the myalgia, the muscle pain, you get a fever, all of that related. So it all goes hand in hand with the response to your vaccine.
Yeah, I said to my wife, I imagine this is what stupid people feel like all the time. And she called me up.
And your wife just nodded at you and looked at you.
She didn't. She called me the most terrible names. A lot of them started with arrogant and ended with all sorts of other things. But anyway, that's an aside. Let's look at some of the other questions. Somebody asking about heavier periods. Is this a common COVID or vaccine symptom?
So of all the research I've done, and I've spoken to a few gynecologists, it's definitely not. There's no doubt that there's no data to show that it causes heavier menstrual cycles or heavier bleeding from any respect. There might be a point where there's another reason for the heavier cycle, or maybe at the actual time of the cycle, but it's not a live vaccine. It's not a live virus that you're getting. So it can cause some physiological abnormalities, but it hasn't been highly documented.
Right. Nikki asking, seems that many people feel sicker once the 10 days are over. Is that common?
Very common. We know that this Delta is a highly transmittable, more contagious virus. And we're seeing that towards the later stages of the actual virus, people do get sicker. They get far more respiratory disease. You know, people say, but it's 10 days later, how can there still be COVID? This is the consequences of what COVID does to your body, especially with the Delta variant.
Right. And Ansan says, my mom wants to know what Dr. Myberg thinks about her going to warm baths. She has been vaccinated. I would say, Dr. Myberg, that if you're going to warm baths, you've got bigger problems than COVID, right?
Yeah, 100%. Look, if you are going away, we know the government has given you the go-ahead to go into provincial travel. Go somewhere safe. Stay away from people as much as possible. Wear your masks. Stay outside. Eat outside. And try to follow the rules.
Right. But it is a long weekend coming up, and it probably actually is a good time, given where we are with the wave, with the third wave. If you have been vaccinated, take the opportunity, I'd imagine. Just be careful.
So just be safe. Don't be arrogant. Don't do things that say, well, now I'm vaccinated, I don't have to worry. You still have to worry. You still have to follow all the rules. but you have got a bit of a cushion there to work with, and that's why it is safer to go away if you choose to do so.
Yeah, so here's an interesting question going back to what we were saying before. Am I still contagious after 14 days or do I have long COVID? I've been told to continue distancing from my family as long COVID is contagious up until symptoms start to evaluate, to alleviate.
So that's not true.
That's confusing the true issues,
that's,
right?
That's not true. No. The issue is as follows. You're contagious for the first sort of 7 to 10 days, and that's why we say it's a 10-day isolation period. Right. Thereafter, you aren't actively making virus replication in your body, so you shouldn't be spreading, unless you are sick enough to be in hospital, where you've got fevers, where you've got severe respiratory disease, and you're on intravenous medication or you're on oxygen in hospital. Some people can get discharged on oxygen and land up being on oxygen for 2 to 3 months. It doesn't mean they're contagious. It means they're dealing with the ramifications of what the disease has done to their lungs and to their body.
Right.
Long COVID is not a contagious disease. It's a consequence of COVID itself.
Right. And Jocelyn asking, are there any worries about a asthmatic having the vaccine? Well, I would imagine that they should be, right?
They're high on the list to have the vaccine.
Yeah, yeah. Laura wanting to know, how do we deal with anti-vaxxers? How do we deal with anti-vaxxers? Is it worth engaging? Is it not worth engaging? What are we meant to do?
You can just ignore them, because there's no point in fighting with people who are against all scientific reasoning and proof. I mean, take it from people who've been on the front line, people who've seen people who are in hospital, people who've seen people die, people who've seen 25-year-olds die, 28-year-olds die, 40-year-olds writing their wills before they're going onto a ventilator on their cell phone before they're dying because they haven't been vaccinated. That's all. You know, I invite the anti-vaxxers to come into the hospital, come and treat the patients in the COVID ward. We'll show them what to do. It's very simple. Don't wear any PPE because it's not necessary if you're an anti-vaxxer. Come and treat those patients. Come and do it and then see how you feel. You know, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, it's just bizarre.
Don't indulge them. There's no point.
Karen says, when will all of this go away, realistically speaking?
Look, realistically, we're in a far better position than we were this time last year, albeit we didn't know there'd be other variants and we didn't know there'd be other things. But with people being vaccinated, there's definitely an improvement in what we see. If I look in the hospital now, the majority of patients, I'd say probably about 95% of the patients are unvaccinated. And of the 5%, it's patients that have only had one of the two vaccines.
Incredible.
And they got this sort of COVID around the time of the vaccination. So the numbers speak for themselves. You can't argue with that.
You can't do more than that. Jody says, I had COVID 3 weeks ago after my first Pfizer, mild. When do I have my second vaccine? My due date is tomorrow, but I only came out of isolation last Friday. I think we've answered this a few times. Basically, 30 days from when...
If it's mild, 30 days.
You're having
We've also said that if you've had COVID and you've had the vaccine within a week or two of each other, then you do need another vaccine. If you've had COVID 3 or 4 weeks after your vaccine in either order, then you don't need another vaccine at this point in time. The jury's still out about booster vaccines yet. We don't know that yet. Obviously, Israel are starting out to do the third boosters, but so far we're not doing them yet. Let's get people vaccinated here before we get our third vaccines if necessary.
Right. And we don't know, Jonathan asking the Lambda variant, we don't know if Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, it's too early to tell which of those are better. Given the choice, because now apparently a lot of the centers, you can choose whether to get Pfizer or Johnson & Johnson. And I know your answer is take whichever you can. But if someone's standing in front of you and says, which one do you want, is there a preference?
So if we look at the data coming from the companies themselves, the Johnson & Johnson say they are highly efficacious against the Delta variant. Pfizer is about 84% effectivity. These are coming from the actual companies themselves. I still say take either one. But if it's going to be a problem to get a second one, or if there's going to be some problem that you aren't able to go for it, go for the Johnson & Johnson rather. One vaccine for now. We'll know at a later stage down the line, 6 months later, if you need a second vaccine, fine. But if it's a problem in 30, sort of 2 to 42 days after your second Pfizer, to get your second Pfizer, then go for that. Yeah. You've got to wait and see what happens with regards to availability But right now, if you've got a choice, just take one or the other.
And your gut is, with regard to people who have had the Johnson & Johnson, that we might be, those that have had the Johnson might be required to have a booster at a later stage. Don't get it yet until it's...
I'm not a betting man, but my feeling is that everyone who's had one Johnson & Johnson will definitely need a booster of some sort, whether it's not, we don't know, there will be another Johnson & Johnson, or if it's an mRNA vaccine like a Pfizer, but I do believe that's on the cards. There's just no doubt in my mind, especially watching what's going on in Israel. We've said that from the beginning. We always believe that they're going to need another vaccine, but I don't believe it's urgent to have it just yet.
Given the way things are going with vaccines, I mean, if we're doing 200,000 a day, well, the last week's been a bit under, but there's also been availability concerns as we were waiting for these new batches to arrive. Let's just assume that from the next week, we're over 200,000. Realistically speaking, by the time we are due for our fourth wave, we really could be in a position to largely avoid...
Yeah, we could be very similar to the United States, very similar where you're getting about a few, or even the UK, where you're getting 30,000 people infected a day, but extremely, extremely small proportion of them only landing up in hospital because they've been vaccinated. So we could be in that type of situation, and that's the ideal situation. We want to be in that situation where, yes, you get sick from flu, but you don't need to go to hospital. That's where we want to go. And if the numbers carry on like that, there's a high chance of that happening. So it's a very positive thing.
Absolutely. That's all my questions. Is there good news?
Well, like I said, before there's good news, there's also new things happening. Ah. There's new drugs being revealed. There's all things. There's a drug called baricitinib, which is an oral medication that's being used.
Is it as effective as ivermectin, though? Because otherwise, I don't know. I want to know.
So I think we better go back to our anti-vaxxer meme in that one. But baricitinib is an oral medication. It's what we call a Janus kinase inhibitor, and that works on your cytokine response. So we think about it in the same sort of way as you think about the tocilizumab, which is against your cytokines. That's a very good drug. It's a very expensive drug, but it's being used to decrease the time to recovery in patients as well as to help with accelerating patients' clinical resolution of the disease. Interesting enough, Israel has put out a test kit for COVID now to see how severe your disease is. So you take a drop of blood, you put it into a test kit, and within 15 minutes, it actually gives you a determination of the severity of your disease and how sick you're going to be, which will be very interesting to know if that actually does work, to see that what your course sort of involves and if you're going to need hospitalization. They also, as we said, are going to vaccinate more than the third booster now. But interesting enough, they also now starting to use the Moderna vaccine in Israel again. Initially, they were using for a very small population. Now they're bringing the Moderna into Israel as well, and they might be using them for their boosters as well.
That is very, very interesting. Will those drugs be available here? And how long do they...
So the baricitinib is available here. It's just highly expensive, and medical aids aren't going to pay for it at this point in time. We just got to work out to see if the benefits outweigh the risks of using these drugs. Right. Overall, though, there is good news. The numbers are down. We have closed down more wards in the hospital. School is up and running, and they're doing extremely well, thank God. And of course, our own Tatiana Schoonmaker brought home gold for the Olympics. And I mean, that's not pride for our nation. And that's what we need at this point in time. And to quote, sometimes I'm the mess, sometimes I'm the broom. On my hardest days, I have to be both. Good luck. Have a good, safe week, and continue being safe.
That is Dr. Anton Marburg for the Synthesis Sunday COVID Report. I'm Howard Feldman. Enjoy the day. Enjoy August the 1st, which is, of course, as we've determined, Spring Day. Get outside, find those blossoms, and just look forward to brighter times. Enjoy your day. Enjoy your week. Be kind, and God bless.